We're talking about America's first Swiss record label here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In 1920, an immigrant artist and entrepreneur from Monroe, Wisconsin, had a dream. It was a dream to establish an American record label featuring sound recordings that resonated with his Swiss immigrant community. Are you of Swiss or German descent? Do you know old traditional songs? Did you grow up hearing them? Did your grandparents or great-grandparents tell you about them? Share the music at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Leary is a professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison. He was nominated for a Grammy in the category of Best Album Notes for his contributions to the album called Alpine Dreaming, the Helvetia record story, 1920 to 1924. And this is his second Grammy nomination. Jim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Oh, it's a treat to be here, Ann.
So your Grammy nomination is for something that we don't always think about when it comes to music, and that is the album notes. You're not in there writing the music, you're writing about the music. How did that feel for you to go in at that in that way?
Well, I think that's the only way I could go in, since I can't play anything, so it felt great.
Felt right, yeah.
But, you know, if you're dealing with historic recordings, people are wondering, you know, why should I care? What is this stuff? And so it really requires some contextualization and digging into the background. And that's a lot of fun for me to go down one rabbit hole or another.
What led you to Alpine Dreaming? What stuck out to you?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in Rice Lake in Barron County, and that's kind of like the northwest outpost of the historic Swiss cheese making area. I was born in 1950, and when I grew up, there were a number of distinctive cheese factories in the area. Those buildings that were built in the sides of hills, where you could have storage for the cheese, and families like Hilfiggers and Millers ran great little cheese making places. And in my hometown, there was a fellow named Otto Rindlisbacher, who was the descendant of musicians from Switzerland. He was born in the States, but was an amazing musician. He played fiddle, he played button accordion and piano accordion. He hung out with Norwegians and in Rice Lake, and knew a bunch of Norwegian stuff. And he also worked in the woods and sawmills and knew lumber camp tunes. But the Swiss stuff was his heritage, and he played that. He also ran an up north museum bar called the Buckhorn Tavern, where he had collections of musical instruments, and he had actual taxidermy that he'd done, plus fake creatures like the shovel-tailed snow snake, the dingbat, the fur herring, and the owl-eyed ripple skipper. But he played Swiss music, and there was a guy over in Barron who was a Guernsey breeder named John Gietzendonner, who was a stellar yodeler. And, you know, there was still a fair amount of live music on radio in the 50s and even into the early 60s. And I can recall once listening to WJMC, the Rice Lake station, on a Sunday afternoon, and there was some yodeling on, and I thought it was kind of an amazing sound. And at some point, really in the mid 1980s, actually, I was working on a German music in Wisconsin project, and I ran into a guy over in Iron Ridge, Wisconsin, in Dodge County, Milton Bruni, who was of Swiss descent, and he had a record collection, and he had some of these old Helvetia 78 RPM records that he was showing me. And I looked at one, and I thought, my God, there's Otto Rindlisbacher on this record. And I had no idea. And I checked here at our Mills Music Library at UW-Madison, and they had another one. And so it made me curious. And I mean, there's a longer story, but it's one of those things where you keep an interest. And after a while, you know a little more and a little more and a little more. And at some point, you know enough to go ahead I was actually asked to do this as a coincidence of running into the Archaeophone Records folks at an event here on campus. And I made a little presentation about the Helvetia label, and they said, let's do a reissue. I'd never thought about it, but we plunged in.
Rest is history. Jim Leary is a professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison. He was nominated for a Grammy in the category of Best Album Notes for his contributions to the album we're talking about, Alpine Dreaming. Were your ancestors immigrants to Wisconsin? What do you know about their story and the kind of music they listened to and played? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So Helvetia was a record label started by a man named Ferdinand Ingold in 1920. Can you tell us about Ferdinand's story and how he came to Wisconsin?
Yeah, he was born in the Thurgau area of northeastern Switzerland, and apparently he traveled around some as a young man. His wife was from Bern, the canton, which is a distance away, and in 1892 they had five children when they immigrated to Monroe, Wisconsin, and he was an artist. I suspect, you know, things were not that easy in terms of making a living, and Swiss people had come to Wisconsin as early as the 1840s in the New Glarus area of Greene County. But a lot of people from Bern were coming over as cheesemakers as Wisconsin kind of shifted from wheat to dairy production in the 1880s and 1890s. And at that time, Wisconsin had the highest per capita Swiss population of any state in the Union. So I think he found he was engaged in, you know, in chain migration, and he thought there were going to be opportunities here. And he kind of scraped around, started a little shop in 1899, and was importing things from Switzerland and producing postcards and portraits, and eventually began to import and sell records. And One thing led to to another.
But this was a short-lived record label, 1920 to 1924.
Yeah, it was very short-lived. Up until World War I, American companies were able to import records from Europe, and that was blocked a lot, of course, by wartime. And in about 1917, some of the major labels, Victor and Columbia, based in New York, began to issue Swiss recordings. And those some of those performers, a guy named Fritz Zimmermann, who was a yodeler, and other people, would go on tours to Swiss communities. And there was Turner Hall in Monroe, and they would play there. And I think this planted the idea in the mind of Ferdinand Ingold, you know, that maybe I can not just sell records, but maybe we can do something here. But consider that he was in Monroe, Wisconsin, and so there's no studio there, there's no production facility. You know, how do you do it? And
he had to be scrappy.
Yeah, he was scrappy, but he also ended up going bankrupt in the mid-20s. So it was short-lived, but it was grand.
We're talking with folklorist Jim Leary about the story behind the two CD set Alpine Dreaming. His album notes on this project are up for a Grammy Sunday. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What speaks to you here? Do you hear your ancestors in this music? You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're learning about the musical heritage of Swiss, German, and Austrian folk music on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The new CD is called Alpine Dreaming, the Helvetia record story, 1920 to 1924. And here's just one of the duets by Otto Rindlisbacher and Karl Hoppe. It's called Garsauer Ländler. Are you an immigrant to Wisconsin? What is your story of immigration? What role does music play in your life? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. UW-Madison folklorist Jim Leary stays with us. He's up for a Grammy in the category of Best Album Notes on the CD Alpine Dreaming. So, Jim, you know, let's talk a little bit here about yodeling. There's a variety of music on the album, but a lot of it is yodeling. And let's start out and hear a track called Cuckoo Yodel Song. Tell us about this song. What's going on here?
Well, of course, they're doing some onomatopoeic bird imitations of a sort, and you know, yodeling. You do this head to chest singing. I wish I could do it. I can't. An emphasis on the vowels, and of course, in Switzerland, it can resound in the mountain valleys and echo and so forth. So it's an artful kind of singing.
And how did you hear yodeling? Do you hear it in venues? How was it around you? How was it displayed?
Yeah, I didn't hear that much growing up. I mentioned that little bit over the radio, but of course it got into old-time hillbilly and even a little bit of blues singing, some of which I've heard now and then. Growing up, you can hear a little bit of yodeling in Hank Williams singing, or even in some of the rockabilly singing of Buddy Holly. But earlier, of course, Jimmy Rogers, the so-called father of country music, with his blue yodels, and blues singers and jug band singers like the Mississippi Sheiks and later Howlin' Wolf have yodels. And in the mid-19th century, there was a family called the Rainier family. They were from Tyrolean, and they toured the United States. They toured Europe. They were international hits. They set off kind of a yodeling craze, and there was a Tyrolean invasion like the Beatles' British invasion in the mid-19th century, and they made a huge mark, kind of in the same way that the Hawaiian guitar made a huge, that kind of raised string steel guitar you play with a slider, you know, made a huge impact in the early 20th century. So it became a part of American music in one a lot of different strange ways.
And that particular yodel song was sung by Charles Schoenberger and Louisa Schneckenbuehl.
Yes, yeah, they're great names, aren't they?
Yes, what do we know about them?
Well, it took me a long time to figure it out, and they actually lived in one of the other concentrations of Swiss settlers in northern New Jersey, where a lot of Swiss people were involved in the garment trades. And, you know, there's a paradox about these songs, because, a lot of them are about the pristine air and the mountain beauty and so forth. What did the chief yodeler do, Charles Schoenberger? He worked in a dyeing factory, a silk dyeing factory, with skeins of silk on like a piece of lath, dragging them through a vat of dye like 6 days a week for 12 hours a day in this sort of unhealthy, dark circumstance. And then on the weekends, he could go to the Swiss Hall with a painted backdrop of the mountains and sing these...
And
clear
his
lungs out.
Yeah. And so we also have some other clips. We have Shire Schnabi, who has is talking about shepherding. In
oh, Kyr Knabi.
Okay. Yeah.
And Kyr, that's is cow, and Knabi, it's the same root word as knave in English, and the old meaning of knave isn't so villainous, but it means kind of like a peasant. So this is kind of like a cowboy or a cowherd song.
Let's hear it.
Let's hear it.
And so what are they trying to do in that song?
Part of it, they're singing about, you know, the experience, the jolly experience of a somewhat lusty cowboy up there mm-hmm. in the mountains looking for a young women referred to as dirndls, kind of in relation to their dresses. But, these recordings are almost 100 years old, and they were made with fairly crappy materials. And Rich Martin of Archaeophone did an astonishing job of cleaning up the sound. And it actually wasn't until this was produced, when I listened to this on headphones, that I could tell that Frau Schneckenbuhl is actually singing some words as in the second part, in addition to her vocable or her yodels. And I'm not sure what she's singing.
That's okay. Let's take a call now. Let's go to John in Richland Center. Hi, John. What are you hearing here with this music?
I think it's cheerful. It's delightful. It is nice to listen to because it has a bass, a fiddle, an accordion. When I was a child growing up in Milwaukee, I was wearing lederhosen for many, many years.
John, thank you so much. And it sounds like your grandfather came over on the boat from Germany. Is that right? Oh, I guess we can't hear John anymore. But he was wearing lederhosen all the same in Milwaukee, of course.
Yeah, well, Milwaukee, of course, has a long-standing German population.
Was
at one point known as the German Athens, and there have been these clubs like Schwabenhof and places in Menominee Falls on the Silver Spring Road where United German Societies have performed. And actually, Ferdinand Ingold, large family, he had two sons who ended up having a Swiss import shop in Milwaukee for a while. They combined it with motorcycle sales and repairs.
I love it. Well, let's hear another clip here. This is another yodeling song, and something about the Rhine River here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think
it's Hill am Rhine.
Yes. Yes.
Let's take a listen. What do we know here about this song?
Okay, that was the high, florid vocal style. That was Frida Haldi, the Swiss nightingale, and she was the daughter of Swiss immigrants. Grew up in Cleveland, born in a tar paper shack on the Cuyahoga River, and ended up marrying a cheese importer from Canton, Ohio, and was very active singing there. And you can hear a second vocal by a guy named Jakob Joost, who was from Emmental, that valley associated with Swiss cheese, from that valley. And then way underneath there was a zither played by Konstantin Wunderli, who was a Bavarian. And Joost and Wunderli made over 78 RPM. They recorded over 80 tracks for different labels. They barnstormed around and got to be friends then with this Frida Haldi, and they made a few recordings in Canton, Ohio, that were then issued on the Helvetia label. They ended up in Los Angeles, those guys, and in the mid-30s, they were involved in a film called Melody in Spring, and Frida Haldi was out there, and all three of them performed, and there's even a clip up on YouTube. If you Googled Melody in Spring, you can see the stars singing. They're on an alpine vacation, but in the background, there's some dairy maids and cowherds wandering around, and they're among them.
We're talking about the CD Alpine Dreaming and a 60-page booklet by folklorist Jim Leary. It offers an extensive background on one of the first American record labels established by an entrepreneur immigrant in Monroe, Wisconsin in 1920. Jim's up for a Grammy for the album Notes in Alpine Dreaming. Are you of Swiss or German descent? Do you know of any old traditional songs? Did you grow up hearing them? Did your grandparents or great-grandparents pass them down to you? We'll get back to the music after a news update. Stay with us for more Alpine Dreaming here on the Ideas Network. The record label was called Helvetia. That's the Latin word for Scandinavia. We're talking about its origin story in 1920 in Monroe, Wisconsin, here on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The new CD, Alpine Dreaming, contains 36 newly restored and remastered songs from the record label. We're listening now to Das Leben bringt Große by the Mainer Quartet. You can join in with this discussion about music from the Alps at 800-642-1234. What music do you bring from your homeland? How do you preserve it? How do you pass it down to the next generation? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Jim Leary stays with us. He's a professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison, up for a Grammy Sunday in the category of Best Album Notes for his contributions to the album Alpine Dreaming. Jim, listening there to the Mainer Quartet, what do we hear?
Well, you hear four male singers, and this kind of choral part singing was and still is a big part of the immigrant and ethnic experience for people, especially who came from Europe. And there was a vogue of this kind of singing in the 19th century that carried over often in connection with social and fraternal and kind of insurance organizations. And there still are active, for example, in Monroe, the Monroe Swiss Singers, and also in New Glarus, the New Glarus Yodel Club. And sometimes they sing in a big choir. Sometimes they sing in a mixed with male and female, a smaller vocal combinations. And sometimes there are these male quartets. We don't know who these singers are. Mm-hmm. They were just kind of, every Swiss and German community had such a quartet, pretty much. But they were a good one.
Well, it's interesting too that this is not just about Monroe or New Glarus. It's about New Jersey and Ohio and all of these other communities that sprung up in different states.
Well, these immigrant folks and their descendants were very much networked, and there were singing societies, and there were halls in these different communities, and occasionally people would get together for big events where the performers from the different communities would travel. And we know there were, for example, in Monroe and New Glarus, the Swiss singers from Chicago would come and visit, and the ones from Milwaukee, and then those visits would be returned. And we also know that Frida Haldi, at the 1933 Chicago Century of Progress event, the World's Fair in Chicago, she sang with a quartet of yodelers from Monroe.
How was Helvetia Records received during that time? How was Ferdinand's idea received?
It's really hard to know for sure, but there was, for example, the Amerikanische Schweizer Zeitung, which was a leading Swiss newspaper in New York City, and Ingold advertised in that paper as well as in a Swiss calendar or an annual that would come out every year. And that newspaper, Schoenberg and Schneckenbuhl in particular were praised for their yodeling, saying they don't have to leave the glory just to the Swiss. Here in America, we have our own yodelers. We know that the records were marketed out in the Portland, Oregon area, where they're Swiss out in that place. And certainly in Cleveland, Ohio. Now, we don't know. I don't think they were giant sellers because the company didn't last too long. But certainly they were well-received critically, and they did get around, and Ingold did make an effort to make them more widely known. And there were these reviews out there that we were able to track down.
You knew Otto Rindlisbacher.
Yes.
How did he receive you exploring his music and the roots of this story, and what did he want you to know?
Well, Otto, I only knew him mostly as a kid going into the tavern and and cafe, gaping at the stuff there, and then later I delivered newspapers, a bundle of newspapers when the Rice Lake Chronotype came out on Wednesday. By the time I really got to talk to him, it was in 1975, and he'd had a stroke, and he couldn't articulate very much. I got to know after he died, his daughter quite a bit better. So most of what I know about him is second hand. But I do know, the interesting thing about him, he was part of the Swiss network, and touring Swiss performers would play down around in Greene County, and then they would play up in Barron County. And then he came down and played with his wife, who was also a musician, for Cheese Days in Monroe. And we know from newspaper accounts in 1920, he ordered a $500 accordion from a manufacturing company that's still going in Chicago, and he went out with this violin player, Carl Hoppe, playing different vaudeville gigs, and they made recordings in New York City for the Helvetia record label. So we can follow his track through a combination, I guess, of interviews with descendants and people who knew him and newspaper accounts, and then, of course, the track on the discs, so to speak.
Talking with Jim Leary, he is a professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was nominated for a Grammy in the category of Best Album Notes for his contributions to the album we're talking about, Alpine Dreaming. There's still time for you to join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jim, you had to do quite a bit of digging to find all of this original music, and it sounds like it was scattered in different places, in estate sales. How did you unearth it all, and do you have it all?
We have all 18 78 RPM records that they put out, 36 tracks. They've all been restored. We have about half of them at the music library here at University of Wisconsin, and that kind of gave us our start. But they're collectors. There's a guy named Bob Kuhn up in Menasha who has a house full of 78 RPM records, and he had some that we didn't have. There was another fellow who lives in Tennessee but used to live in Monroe who had some more, and the amazing Rich Martin and Megan Hennessy of Archaeophone Records. They're based in Champaign, but they drove to those places. I rendezvoused with them in Menasha. They brought a disc cleaning equipment and a portable turntable and a couple of different kinds of needles and a laptop to move the thing on and a scanner to scan the label. So that was really a challenge. Some record, the final missing one, we found on YouTube, and then we got a hold of the collector who ended up donating the record. So that was a real chore, and the other chore was figuring out what they were singing, because they're in different Swiss dialects. Some of them are Austrian songs with residual Austrian expressions, but they've been Swissified. Some are in standard German. Some are in English, but it's the English of people who don't speak English too well. And they're old recordings, and so trying to find out what they were singing was also a tremendous challenge.
Well, and as we have this conversation, I'm realizing how cheese is threading through all of this music in some form or fashion. There's this underlying tone of cheese.
Well, sure, I'll buy that. This is Wisconsin.
But these musicians all had ties to the industry in some way.
Yes, especially those who came, came to Wisconsin. There was a great geographer, Glenn Terwartha, who wrote that the cheese factory is to Wisconsin what the cotton gin was to the South and the reaper was to the Western wheat fields, and it allowed the industrialization and production and marketing of cheese in the late 19th and early 20th century. And there was this profusion of cheese factories, and they needed skilled makers, and those people came over, and they included yodelers, and they included Guernsey breeders like John Gietzendonner, who was a great yodeler, and that fostered Swiss societies and a market for these records, as well as artists who could perform on them. So cheese is very much a part of the story.
You had to boil this down to 60 pages, as I'm thinking here, and you have all of this history in your head. How did you do that?
I come from several generations of journalists and writers, and so you've got to write something to, just like radio, you've got to fit it in the time frame. If you're writing something, you've got to fit it into a format. So you have to figure out what's important, and you have to make all your words count, or try to. So I tried to.
We're talking with folklorist Jim Leary about the new CD, Alpine Dreaming. It pays tribute to the works of a record label that originated in Monroe, Wisconsin from 1920 to 1924. The music pays homage to Swiss, German, and Tyrolean songs, and especially yodelers from Swiss communities in Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Ohio. Still time for you to reflect on this music at 800-642-1234. How do you want music traditions in Wisconsin preserved? What do you want to ask the folklorist? He's here for you. Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the music in a minute on the Ideas Network. Exploring a bygone era of music that was nearly lost, that pays tribute to the Swiss community of immigrants in Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In 1920 in Monroe, a Swiss settler, Ferdinand Ingold, had this idea to create a record label. He called the label Helvetia, which is a nod to his homeland's ancient name, and it celebrates its musical heritage. And this is another duet, Pippin Dus Biest Mein Augustern, and the name appears that the musicians appear to have lost over time. What questions do you have about the music you're hearing? Have you heard this music in your Wisconsin town? And where do you go to hear it? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Bill joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. I'm just so happy to hear a program that doesn't have to do with governmental close down and all of these related sad
Hey, Bill, hey, don't tamp it down here. What do we got going on with folklore?
Yeah, I'm a folklorist, but it's for Latin America. And also tonight we have an open mic here in one of our local bars, and I'm going to be singing an American folklore song. I'm from the Pacific Northwest, and I'm going to be singing a song about the origins of, you know, a European society in Puget Sound. So there's a lot of us who are interested in a lot of types of folklore, and I just really congratulate the visitor there, who he says he's a professor of folklore. I don't know whether there are universities that give professorships or doctorates in folklore.
I love it. Well, we were talking about this before the program. It's a long journey to get there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have a PhD in folklore and American studies from Indiana University, and we've had a folklore program here at Wisconsin since 83.
And speaking of what Bill brought up, some gigs coming up. You've got a yodeling gig coming
up.
Yeah.
February 28th, Mount Horeb Public Library. I'll give a little presentation on the record label. And Deb Krause-Smith, who directs the Monroe Swiss Singers, also yodels. She's coming up with two Alphorn players and button accordion players. And they still do some songs that are in... songs in their repertoire that also correlate with what's on this recording. Then we'll also on April 9th in Monroe at Turner Hall, we're going to do kind of the same thing.
Wow. And you're headed out to the Grammys then later this week.
Yeah, we're leaving Friday morning, and the big event is Saturday afternoon for my category. Yeah. Sunday afternoon.
What does the story tell us about Wisconsin and about the American history, particularly when it comes to the immigrant experience?
Yeah, you know, my family, famine refugees from Ireland, Ferdinand Ingalls, poor family, you know, seeking a better life, immigrants today coming here, same sort of thing, mostly hardworking people, and people have dreams. I call this alpine dreaming, because the dreams go in two directions. You know, one is dreaming of the beautiful homeland that for various reasons they had to leave. The other one is dreaming of a better life in this country, and both of them are, they're fraught dreams. They don't always come true, or they don't come true completely. They're struggles, but they, you know, they give us insights into kind of deep humanity and humanity that's going on right here in Wisconsin through time as well as now.
I was going to ask you too, what did you learn about yourself through this project?
Oh man, I learned that I'm kind of a maniac for digging into this arcane stuff and immersing myself and following down leads and trying to bring it to life so that it gets back to other people, and maybe these songs will be sung again, or they'll resonate with younger generations. I feel like I owe it to these artists from the past who sweat some blood about all this and brought us joy.
I have to ask very quickly, what is your next project?
Actually, I'm working on another immigrant record label, Wallin Svenska Records, begun by a Swedish immigrant. And we're about two-thirds of the way there and finding all of those records and tracking down information.
Where did that record label originate?
It was in Chicago.
Okay.
But the performers had connections to Wisconsin and Minnesota as well.
I love it. You found a niche. That's great. So how long does a project like this take?
It takes a couple of years. Yeah. You got to find the stuff. You got to find out what the stuff means. You got to, it's a very long process to not only transfer the stuff, but restore the sound. So it takes several years.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jim Leary is a professor emeritus of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison, nominated for a Grammy in the category of Best Album Notes for his contributions to the album Alpine Dreaming, the Helvetia Records story, 1920 to 1924, and this is his second Grammy nomination. Health insurers often want patients to try the most cost-effective drug first before moving on to more expensive or risky therapies. These policies can prevent patients from getting the treatment their doctor says they need. Shemaine Mills reports how a woman in central Wisconsin struggled to get medication that worked.
For Samantha Espinoza, a long drive to the doctor from her rural home was one hurdle to getting care. Another obstacle was getting insurance to cover the therapy her doctor recommended. I went to visit her on a day so cold the snow squeaked like styrofoam. At the door, Samantha greets me with a warm smile.
Nice to meet you.
She looks healthy and happy, but it wasn't always this way. Espinosa suffers from psoriasis, a chronic autoimmune disease which caused red sores on her skin and damaged her self-esteem.
It was physically painful as well, but the emotional pain and now the ongoing scarring, that's something I'll have to live with for the rest of my life.
In 2012, Espinosa's doctor prescribed a newer biologic drug to control the psoriasis called Stelara. The drug can cost up to $30,000 a year. Her insurer denied the claim and made her try cheaper steroid creams first. They didn't work, and she still has a large tote bag full of unused medicine.
The bag itself weighs about 15 pounds. And I would go through one of these tubes every day to cover my body because I was at 80% coverage of the psoriasis.
The steroid cream to treat the scaly, itchy patches on her skin was so potent, her husband had to wear gloves when he helped apply it.
Seth would cover me in one of these tubes my backside because I couldn't reach my backside. Every movement I made, my skin would break and crack.
The nightly 30-minute ritual wasn't done yet. She and her husband wrapped her up like a mummy in hopes the medicine would work better.
We would take saran wrap and wrap from my legs all the way up to right about my neck. So from the neck up, I was, you know, free of plastic. Everything else was covered.
It was uncomfortable, but she endured the hassle because she couldn't take pills covered by insurance. Her doctor said that medication, methotrexate, might cause liver damage. Senator Alberta Darling of River Hills is proposing legislation, along with fellow Republican Representative John Nygren of Marinette, that could help patients get the right medicine with fewer hassles.
So that one doesn't have to fail first before going on to the therapy that the doctor thinks is in the best interest of the patient, which is really, really important.
Those lobbying for the change include groups representing patients with costly conditions like arthritis, cancer, MS, mental health, and addiction. Angie Tease is with a coalition of 29 national and state groups that support legislation like this to reform what is known as step therapy. That's when a patient must try cheaper therapies first, even if their doctor disagrees. Tease says so far more than a dozen states have such laws on the books. Wisconsin's proposal would still require pre-authorization for expensive drugs, but there would be exemptions, and patients could get the drugs quicker because their insurer would have 24 hours to respond to emergency requests. If there's no answer during that time frame, Tease says the request is automatically approved.
So that's really important that we don't have a patient or a provider, you know, sitting out in rural Wisconsin or in metro Wisconsin, wherever it is, waiting for an answer on whether or not that person can get their medication.
It took years for Samantha Espinosa to get the right treatment. Her psoriasis is now under control because she got the medication her insurer originally turned down. But the need to keep medical costs in check came at a high personal price. She and others hope for a better way to balance patients' needs with skyrocketing prescription costs. Shemaine Mills, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And you're listening to The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.